welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Mike. Got a bit of a different study this week.
We've got a great study, and it really resonated strongly with me. It's from the Journal of General Internal Medicine. I'll give the citation in a moment. But by way of background, I'm not sure that listeners are familiar with the sort of conceptualization of curriculum, but there are three types of curriculum that we teach our students and our residents. The first is the intended curriculum. That's sort of what's published in the guidelines, and it's what we advertise to our medical students we're going to be teaching them. The second is the delivered curriculum, and often that's similar to the intended curriculum. But when you get into a clinical setting like the wards, you know, the delivered curriculum differs depending on who's in the hospital that day or the clinic, who the attending is, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a huge variety of delivered curriculum. The third type of curriculum is what we call the hidden curriculum, and that's the topic for today. By hidden curriculum in medical education, we mean that it's far more than simple transmission of knowledge and skills. It really is a socialization process, meaning wittingly or unwittingly, the norms, the values, our approach to patients are speaking for themselves. It doesn't really matter what we say. It's how we behave and how we act. It's a little like the parent who says to the kid, stop smoking, while they continue to smoke themselves. Message is quite clear. When we get to words, the words we choose are powerful. And, you know, as a medical student, I can say that I was exposed to all sorts of stigmatizing language, most of it directed to patients and to other providers, but some of it was directed at me. The words we use to describe illness and patients can send powerful messages. Well, it's hard to study the impact of all of this on patients, but Mark, you found a study that makes a very good attempt. It is in the Journal of General Internal Medicine, published in 2018, starts on page 685, and it attempts to answer the question, does negative language affect residents and medical students' attitudes towards specific patients, and does it influence their treatment decisions? Mark, what did they do and what did they find?
Yeah, this was a simulation of practice, so I think that's something to keep in mind. And they were studying medical students and emergency or general IM residents. So they had 233 students and 180 ER or IM residents, and they randomized them to read one of two chart notes. The medical information was identical between the two notes. It was about a hypothetical patient with sickle cell disease. So one used neutral language. He has about 8 to 10 pain crises per year, for which he typically requires opioid pain medication in the ED. The other used stigmatizing language. He is narcotic dependent and in our ED frequently. The stigmatizing language would also cast doubt on the patient's pain, still a 10 versus still a 10 out of 10. It portrayed the patient negatively. He hung out at McDonald's versus he spent the afternoon with friends. It also implied patient responsibility by referring to uncooperativeness. He refuses his oxygen mask versus he is not tolerating the oxygen mask. So after reading the note, the residents and students completed the positive attitudes towards sickle cell patients scale. We have a scale for everything. And the residents selected a treatment for the patient from four options that were more versus less aggressive. Attitudes were significantly lower for patients who read the version of the note that used stigmatizing language. And statistically and clinically, 5 points on a 35-point scale, which is a pretty big difference. Attitudes were actually progressively worse with more years of training. So to some extent, we may be training our students and residents to think this way. Residents were more likely to select a less aggressive course of treatment, low-dose opioid or an NSAID, instead of a higher-dose opioid, and were less likely to redose the patient if they were exposed to the stigmatizing language. And those who read the stigmatizing note were also more likely to identify the physician who wrote the note as having a more negative attitude toward the patient. So the bottom line is, I think we need to reflect on our language. Words matter. You know, how we talk about our patients is often ingrained in us, deeply ingrained in us, but we have to be willing to re-examine some of those things. Like you said, patients complain, admit, deny, refuse. That really sends a message to our colleagues who read the note, but also to our learners. And we need to work on that. This is a real wake-up call, I think.
You know, for what it's worth, several years ago, I did a study that was published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine as well, looking with real patients at the simple sentence of replacing the word some, with the word any. Do you have any other questions, or do you have some other questions with the patients? And we looked at patient satisfaction and looked at how many of them followed up with questions. And, you know, that one word was profound, the difference. And so the fact that they found such differences, and yes, it's a simulated study, but I'm not sure that any listener could argue that, oh, this isn't how it really works. So I commend them. I think it's a great study, and it's a great reminder of us to be really careful, not only of the language that we're using, but of who's watching us and what message we may be sending.
I agree, and I like your point about the some versus any, although I have to say, reflecting on my Monday morning clinic and one patient in particular, there's some people where I will not give them that option by the time we got to problem 10. I think they'd had their say.
Yeah. Thanks, Marco. We'll talk with you again next week.
All right, good.
Well, that's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to read this and other recent poems, please go to www.essentialevidence.com. And please join us again next week for another medical poem.